ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय तपस्या विद्याया पक्वा कषायो नियमाय युयुजे ब्रह्मण्यात्मानं विचिताक्षानिलाशया. By worshipping, executing austerities, and following the regulative principles, King Malayadvaj conquered his senses, his life, and his consciousness. Thus, he fixed everything on the central point of the Supreme Brahman, Krishna. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. Whenever the word Brahman appears, the impersonalists take this to mean the impersonal effulgence, the Brahma Jyoti. Actually, however, Parabrahman, the Supreme Brahman, is Krishna, Vasudev. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Vasudeva Sarvam Iti. Vasudev extends everywhere as the impersonal Brahman. One cannot fix one's mind upon an impersonal something. Bhagavad Gita therefore says, Klesho dikataraastesham avyakta shaktatesham. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. Bhagavad Gita, 12th chapter, text 5. Consequently, it is said herein that King Malayadvaja fixed his mind on Brahman. Brahman means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, text 28, entitled Puranjan Becomes a Woman in the Next Life. Text number 38. In this chapter, the great Vaishnava Acharya Narada Rishi is continuing his allegorical presentation to the King Prachinibarhushat out of his very kind, compassionate nature. He is somehow or other trying to enlighten the king and convince him of his very dangerous, lamentable condition in life. Human life is so valuable. It is so very precious. For a human life to be wasted without giving up the body in remembrance of Krishna, or at least well on the way, on the path to going back to Godhead, is great loss. Because according to the intricacies of the laws of karma, we do not know where the soul will be forced to travel. King Puchini Barhishat was a religious man, but at the same time very much attached to the material senses and enjoyment, attached to prestige, and he performed various religious rituals for the purpose of improving his materialistic ways of life. Now, for the people of this world, this is a very pious and glorious way of living. A religious man. But for Narada Muni, a person who is seeing the truth, such a life is abominable. Out of so many living entities, it is rare to get human birth. And out of human beings, it's rare to find anyone who's practicing some form of religion. Generally, a person who is following some religious principles, some ritualistic directions, is considered a very upright person in society. But for a Vaishnav, for one who understands the real treasure that is within the heart, and what is the real goal, such activities are condemnable. That is the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam from the very beginning, Dharma Projita Kaita Votra, that the Srimad Bhagavatam kicks out cheating religion. Cheating religion means those religious principles that distract us away from the unalloyed loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this world, people who follow the paths of Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda are considered very, very pious religious people, to be respected very highly. But we find throughout our Vaishnav Acharya's writings, they're actually warning us against the enemies of Karmakanda and Jnanakanda. Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, gave that allegory or that analogy story to Sanatan Goswami, that Saravagya, who was a great seer of the truth, he told one man who was looking for the treasure of life, he said, do not dig in the western direction, do not dig in the southern or the northern direction, go to the eastern direction. Because in one direction, the western direction, which is Karmakanda, he said there is a yaksha, like a ghost that will haunt you. No, I'm sorry, bees, yes? There is bees and wasps that will sting you. Bees and wasps that will sting you. Because this path of fruitive activities, and even pious activities, ultimately, yehi samsparashicha bhoga dukha jonaya evate, they are sources of misery, they are temporary. Whatever we find pleasure in, even in our pious religious acts, will ultimately cause the stinging of the wasps due to fruitive karmic reactions. And do not go to this other direction because there is the black serpent that will devour you, which is Jnanakanda, where we're trying to give up conception of our individual personal identity and merge into the oneness of the Supreme. To Lord Chaitanya, that was like being devoured by a black serpent. To others, that's considered the ultimate goal of life. And the path of mystic yoga, he said, it's like yaksha that will simply haunt your mind, disturb your mind in so many ways. We become further entangled in material attachments and attractions by developing mysticism. So it is considered to be very great and worshipable by common people. We're warned against by the Vaishnavacharyas. But if you go to the eastern side, that is the path of bhakti, bhakti marg, where we will very easily find that great treasure that we are all looking for. A shiromani, purushartha shiromani, the crest jewel of all goals of life, which is prema pumartha mahan, unalloyed loving devotional service to Sri Krishna. So yes, obviously King Prachini Barhishat was very honored as a very pious king who performed rituals and so on and so forth. But to Narada Muni, he was in a most unfortunate situation because he was cheating his own inner consciousness of the opportunity to go back to Godhead, which was his rightful inheritance. Therefore, he told the story of King Puranjan. And this Puranjan, who is a spirit soul traveling through various bodies of life, 8,400,000 species, was a great king. And in essence, so much wonderful philosophy is contained within this story. But in the end, because King Puranjan was accustomed to the ritualistic acts of karmakanda of that day, of sacrificing animals in various types of yajnas with Brahmins and priests. And although he was considered a religious man, he was very attached to the body and the senses. And at the time of his death, when he and his life air and his subtle body was being stripped away by death personified, he was thinking in such deep separation from his wife and family. And in next life, he became a lady. And he explains the next life, where there was a very great king named Malayadvaja. And this princess of Vidarbha, she was married to him. But he was actually a great devotee. He was not Karmakandi, Gyanakandi, Astangakandi. He was a bhakta. So he ruled his kingdom in a very great spirit of devotional service. And he had a daughter who was married to Agastya Muni. And then he had 7 sons who he trained very nicely to take the kingdom. And when he saw when everything was in order, he went into the forest as Vanaprastha. Because unlike King Puranjan, he wanted to perfect his life by all means before he died. It's an emergency. When you start getting old, death could come. Of course, in those days, there was more chances that you would live according to a natural plan. That it was expected that you had a certain amount of time to perfect your life after you retire from worldly activities. But in today's world, although the system is there, and it is actually mandatory for people who really want to perfect their lives, Kali Yuga, things are so uncertain. In any stage of life, nobody knows where they're going to live till tomorrow. Nobody knows what tomorrow will bring. In fact, nobody knows what today will bring. Padam, padam, yad vipadam, nate sham. Learned persons, they make their goal in life the spiritual world of Vaikuntha, not a place where there is danger at every step. Trying to make a permanent solution to problems in a world that's ever-changing, that is transient, mutable, and temporary, is an impossible proposal. Krishna tells in Gita, Dukalayam Ashashvatam, that great souls, they do not make their goal in a place which is filled with miseries. And according to Gita, the pleasures of this world are just the flip side of the sufferings of this world. There's not much discrimination. Happiness, distress, honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, victory, defeat, success, failure, birth, death. They are all inseparable to one another. Like the heads and the tails of coin. You can't take one without the other. A wise person sees the impending suffering in sense gratification. An ignorant person only sees that bright side of things, the sense gratification. I can enjoy this. Prabhupada gives example like the goat that is in the slaughterhouse. They're feeding very delicious grasses. Maybe the best grasses they ever had in their whole life. It's like the Last Supper for the goats. They're eating regular old grasses. But just to keep them very calm and very satisfied and very distracted from the imminent, they may give them very first-class grass. First-class grass, which is very rare for them. And they're eating, oh, this is the nicest grass I've had. So nice, so nice. And they're moving to eat the grass. You have to come forward. Then more grass is given. And you take another step and more grass and another step. And the goats in front of you are all getting their head chopped off. And if the goat just looked up, he would see that all his colleagues are being slaughtered. But he's so enamored by the sweet taste of these opulent grasses that he doesn't even look up. He's unaware of the reality of where his grass eating is going to bring him. So this is sense gratification. It's the path to death. Material enjoyment, which is not only the satisfaction of the five gross senses, but the satisfaction of the subtle senses, the mind, intelligence, and ego, which come through desire for profit, adoration, and distinction. Very difficult to give up. But it is a path to death. So this is wisdom, to understand that the imminent seed of pain and suffering is in every pleasure that we strive to achieve that is not in harmony with the needs of our soul, which is on the material platform. But after so many lifetimes of just being kicked, one comes to the platform perhaps that I just don't want to do any activities. I don't want any sense gratification. I don't want anything. I just want an end to this mess of materialistic life. So let me annihilate all conceptions that are causing me pain. So they take to the impersonalistic school of annihilating their ego and thus annihilating their identity and entering into Brahman. But according to the great Vaishnavacharyas and the Srimad Bhagavatam, the essence of all holy scriptures, this is another sort of diversion. So King Malayadvaj, he was such a learned person, such a wise person, that he gave up his family. He gave up everything, his palace, his enjoyments, and went to the forest. As soon as he saw his children were good enough to take over, it was a relief for him. Today, people want to hold on to the bitter end, you know, on one form or another, on one level or another. Just hold on. That I'll stay in with my power until the day I die. The King Malayadvaj, like so many other great kings of the Vedic era, as soon as he saw, my children are qualified, they may not do as good a job as me, but that's all right. My job now is to go back to Godhead. My job now is to set an example for the world. That is my duty at this point. And just as I learned from my mistakes, my children will learn from their mistakes also. I taught them well. So he left it all behind. I went to the forest. And King Puranjan, who is now the Princess Vidarbhi, she's following behind him. Because it's not that she was thinking, my dear husband, you're going to the forest. I'll stay home with the children. No, because she understood her duty as a human being was also to go back home, back to Godhead. Whether you're male or female, the human life is meant for self-realization. So they went together to the forest. And we find in these wonderful pages what kind of austerities they both performed together. Simply incredible. But it was not difficult austerities. It was actually blissful austerities. And here we find that King Malayadvaj is completely fixing his mind, his senses, and his very consciousness on the Supreme Brahman, on Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. Srila Prabhupada explains herein that when Srimad Bhagavatam speaks of Brahman, it is so clear in context with the whole of the Bhagavatam, what we are talking about. We are talking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because throughout the Bhagavat, there is description of meditating on the form of the Lord, who is Brahman, beyond all material, who is pure spiritual. The first canto describes the three stages of self-realization as Brahmiti Paramatmiti Bhagavan Iti Shabdite, impersonal Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Krishna or Bhagavan is the energetic source, the Shaktiman. Brahman is the Shakti, the energy of the Lord, the all-pervading energy of the Lord. Parashya Shaktir Vibhadaiva Shruyate, the Lord has multifarious energies. Srila Prabhupada actually explains what yoga means. It means to see unity in diversity. And in the absolute truth, there is so much diversity. In the absolute truth. And we cannot discard the diversity. For those who just don't want to deal with the apparently complex matter of unity and diversity, they create this conception of Advaita, where all diversity is illusion. It doesn't really exist. It is non-existent. There is only the Supreme One. And under illusion, we think that there's any diversity in that one Supreme. But parashya shatir vivadaiva shruyate. The Lord has multifarious, inconceivable energies. And how those energies are acting. There's numberless energies of the Lord. They are divided in various categories. There is the jiva tattva. The jiva tattva is the energies of the Lord, which are the spirit souls that are each one absolutely unique and personal, eternally. And they are all emanating from the Lord. They are all part and parcel of the Lord. They are all existing simply to perform wonderful lila of love with the Lord. Such an incredible understanding of the absolute truth. So rich, so full, so deep, so satisfying. The idea that the absolute truth is just an all-pervading light. That is the Brahma bodies. But for the Vaishnavas, according to the Shastras, we understand a higher realm of understanding is that the absolute truth is full of variegatedness, and all those variegatedness are ultimately simply meant to increase reciprocal loving ecstasies. That's all. Krishna's Rasaraj. He's simply meant for enjoying. It's like Prabhupada tells the story of that German that came to India and he wanted to understand what was the highest goal. And when he met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and heard about the Supreme Lord and saw the deity of Krishna, he said, this is the ultimate. This is the ultimate form of God. Because all other forms of God, they have bows and arrows and they have axes and they have choppers and they have so many weapons to do work with. But Krishna's just enjoying. He's playing flute. So yes, they are all God, but this is the Supreme God, because He is the Supreme Enjoyer. In Goloka Vrindavan, there is simply intimate exchange of love. There's nothing else that happens, ever, for all of eternity. And this is Krishna. Krishna, that one supreme, inconceivable personality, who is the cause of all causes, who is the father of everything that exists, who is the source of all material and spiritual worlds. From Himself, He creates unlimited spiritual sparks, and every spiritual spark is a deeply realized, loving servant. Every spiritual spark, can you imagine, is impregnated with such incredible beauty, with such unbelievable capacity to love, to be in ecstasy Himself or herself, and give such ecstasy to Krishna. That is the spiritual world. So that is the jiva tattva. Now we may think, how is this possible? There can be so many living entities, and everyone is unique. In the spiritual world, everyone has their own name. Everyone has a unique, special bodily features. Everyone has unique way of thinking. Everyone has a unique relationship with Krishna. But even in this temporary, gross, material world, the Lord has created such incredible variegatedness. If any of you have ever gone into the countries of snow, when there is a snowstorm, it's incredible. They are called blizzards. Where I was a small boy in winter, so many blizzards, devastating snowfalls. There were times, Yoginath, he has good experience of this, Prabhu, he knows these. There were times where we'd wake up in the morning and we'd go to open our door and you can't open the door because the snow, it's called a snowdrift, the snow would be from the ground all the way to the roof, about 10 feet thick. So how can you open the door? You look out the windows and you just see snow. It's just gone from the ground to the roof. Huh? And you actually have to, if your phone works, then you call the telephone and you call the fire department to come and they shovel out so you can open your door. So with snow like that, covering thousands and thousands and thousands of miles, how many snowflakes are there? And each snowflake is only this big. So to create thousands of miles of a time of such deep snow, how many snowflakes are there? There is no number that human beings can calculate to count those snowflakes. And yet, scientists have never in history found two snowflakes that are exactly alike in their formation. They're all unique. They're all individual. They're all very personally, artistically created by Krishna through material nature. And if you look at a snowflake under a microscope, it's an incredible work of art. So balanced. It's not just a blot of whiteness. Yes, Srinathji, you know all these things. Srinathji Prabhu knows everything about everything. That is my conclusion after knowing him for 25 years. If you look, it's just an incredible, intricate design. So delicate. Just like formations. There's a center point and then there's so many different beautiful, artistically balanced formations coming out of it to create a snowflake. It's really a work of art. And that work of art, it just lasts for, and then it melts. Psh, finished. So similarly, of the innumerable living entities, everyone has a unique relationship and capacity to feel transcendental ecstasy. And no one feels the same ecstasy because Krishna is reciprocating with each person in a very individual, personalistic way. So everyone's ecstasy is unique to their relationship with Krishna, and every living entity is giving Krishna an ecstasy that is unique, personal. That is the spiritual world. That is jiva tattva. And then there is the tattva of Bhagavan himself, who expands himself in so many ways. So many ways. Various avatars. And within those avatars, such as Balaram, who is an expansion of the Lord. The Lord Balaram is an expansion of the Lord, and he expands in so many ways to create the spiritual world and the paraphernalia for the pleasure of the Lord. It's really a very incredible, deep, profound subject that has no end. And there is also the Shakti Tattva, the various energies of the Lord in His goddesses of fortune, Srimati Radharani, Sita, Lakshmi, Parvati. And there is Brahman, the all-pervading impersonal Brahman, in which everything material and spiritual rests within the Brahman. And there is Paramatma. What a wonderful thought that each and every one of us have this Paramatma right inside of our hearts. I mean, if there's nothing else, we should be completely blissful just to know that Krishna has not rejected us. He's right beside our soul, sitting in our heart, lovingly, patiently watching our every act, hearing our every word, and ready to bestow transcendental ecstatic love upon us as soon as we just surrender. However many materialistic things we do, however far away we go, we should know that that Paramatma never, ever, ever leaves us. He's always there waiting. Whether we're King Malayadvaja, or King Puranjan, or Jagayan Madhai, the Super Soul is right there waiting. At any time, all we have to do is surrender, and He reveals all knowledge to us. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. So these are just some general understandings of the energies of the Lord. So King Malayadvaja, he was a great devotee. He was not meditating on the impersonal, unlimited conception of the Supreme. He was meditating on Krishna, the Supreme Brahman. And here Srila Prabhupada is explaining from Bhagavad Gita, Klesho dikatarastesham avyakta shakta chetasam. This means that for those who are embodied in this world, the worship of the impersonal, unmanifested feature of the Supreme is very, very difficult. Maya shaktamini omam. Krishna says, the one who worships my personal form is most intelligent. He easily comes to me. Ultimately, it is the one Supreme Absolute Truth. So in that sense, we are all following the path back to Krishna. It may be indirect, it may be direct. So Krishna explains, one attains the result of liberation by either the impersonalist or personalist school. They are both transcendentalists. But there are two differences. One is the impersonalistic school of trying for an embodied being with senses and mind who is habituated since time immemorial to objects of perception, to try to think of that which is formless, without body, is very, very difficult. How to fix your mind on the impersonal? How to fix your mind on something formless? It's very, very difficult. But it's very easy to fix your mind on the deity of the Lord, on the name of the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada explains, the Archa-Vigraha is an incarnation of Krishna in this world. Although the deity is made of material elements, stone, wood, paint, and therefore we can see with our hands, we could serve, we could use all of our senses in a very active, dynamic, and practical way to connect ourselves through service to the deity. And with our mind, we could easily remember that form, we could meditate on that form, we could fix our mind on that form. So the Lord is so kind, knowing our material condition, He appears in material elements. But although He's appearing in material elements so that we can see Him and conceive of Him with our material senses, simultaneously, He is that form. Because for Krishna, material and spiritual is quite irrelevant. Krishna is the source of everything. He manifests His supreme spiritual glory even in a material element. Therefore, it's no longer a material element, but it's perceptible by material senses. The deity is not material. The deity is pure spiritual substance. However, out of His mercy, that pure spiritual substance is manifesting to us, incarnating to us in such a way that we can perceive Him with our material senses that can only perceive material things. It's quite inconceivable, but it's quite wonderful. This is the science of the deity worship. And therefore we find throughout the scriptures how greatest souls were worshipping the deities and teaching others how to worship the deities. The Pandavas, Ambarish Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj. There's so much wonderful details of how they worship the Archavigraha. And later such souls, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. They wanted to show us how we can develop love of God so easily and so practically and so directly. Because Krishna directly manifests Himself in the deity. He directly manifests Himself in His name. He directly manifests Himself in the sound vibration of His pastimes. And it's actually very easy and direct to fix our mind completely on Him through the path of bhakti. Whereas through the jnana kanda, it's very difficult. Because we have to somehow or other indirectly fix our mind on something that's very, very difficult. So yes, bhakti is direct and easy. But there's another special feature of bhakti. That through the process of the difficult process of trying to fix our mind on the impersonal, even if we succeed through that very, very troublesome path, according to Krishna, we can at the most realize the sat and chit features of the Absolute. We can attain mukti, which means we understand our eternal existence in relation to the Lord. So we realize that we are eternal. We realize our relation with the Absolute as being eternal. And chit, full of knowledge beyond the relativities of this world. But such a path is void of the full realization of ananda, or ecstasy. That ecstasy can only be realized and tasted in its fullness when we develop realization of Bhagwan, or Krishna, who is Rasik Shekhar. He is the possessor of all loving exchanges. Therefore, Rupa Goswami presents his conclusion, which has been honored and worshipped by all of our great acharyas. He explains that the Brahmananda, the ecstasy of entering into the impersonal Brahman, is like a small drop of water in comparison to the quality and quantity of ecstasy one can experience in the ocean of love of God. Because yes, there is some ananda, there is some pleasure in liberation from all sufferings, in just being in a state of complete peace, shanti, just complete peace. No sound, no taste, no anything. We're just being, pure being. But the exchange of ecstatic, intimate love is billions and trillions of quadrillions of times more satisfying to the heart. Because who is the object of our love? Krishna. There is no limit to Krishna's beauty. There is no limit to Krishna's sweetness. There is no limit to Krishna's attraction, attractive qualities. Therefore, when we repose our loving propensity in Krishna, there is no limit to our ecstasy. Because our ecstasy is not dependent on our own existence. Our ecstasy is dependent on the qualities of Krishna. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada wrote Krishna book. After the first canto of Bhagavatam, when he was still working on second canto, he gave the summary study of 10th canto. Because he understood it as very, very important that people understand Krishna, who's all attractive. Srila Prabhupada explains, if one sincerely, submissively studies Krishna book, one will go back to Godhead. There's no doubt. Because hearing Krishna's qualities, hearing Krishna's wonderful pastimes, seeing Krishna's incredible, intimate, spiritual exchanges of love with his eternal associates, seeing Krishna's mercy upon the fallen souls, hearing about Krishna's unlimited, beautiful bodily features, the beautiful things of this world infatuate our minds, but they are all just insignificant particles whose source is the beauty in Krishna. What is Krishna's beauty? What is Krishna's personality? All attractive. Therefore, the quantity and quality of our ecstasy is based on the quantity and quality of the attractive, loving features of Krishna. That is ananda. So in this way, through these two principles, we can understand how superior the path of bhakti is to any other path. For the impersonalists, very much trouble. And for the bhaktas, very simple and easy and happy to perform. Just like Prabhupada at one meeting here in India, there was these very, very erudite scholars speaking about the Supreme Absolute Brahman and various philosophies of Neti Neti. And when it came to Prabhupada, he saw that the whole audience was really falling asleep. So Prabhupada just had the devotees do kirtan and distribute prasad. Puris, sweet puris. It's joyfully performed. Raja Vidya Raja Kuyam Pavitramita Muttamam. This is the king of knowledge, and it's joyfully performed. Bhakti is so pleasing. It's such a happy process. And it's so simple. And it also gives us entrance into the realm of ananda, which no other process can give us that full realization of. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada, he speaks very, very compassionately to every living entities. He says, at no time should anyone ever follow the impersonalistic school. Krishna is saying, you could do either one, but one is troublesome. But Prabhupada says, don't do it, don't do it. Just follow the path of bhakti. Because he explains, if you become conditioned and habituated to this attempt to meditate on the impersonal, even if you actually come to the platform, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakankshati, you actually come to the point of devotional service through this by meeting a devotee, due to your habits, it creates difficulty. We have seen in our preaching that people who for many, many years have followed this impersonalistic school, even after meeting a devotee and even after understanding the difference between shanti and prem, difference between liberation and ecstatic prema or love of God, still, that conditioning, just even though you're trying to think of Krishna, the mind just goes. It's very difficult. So Prabhupada, out of his compassion, is saying, just surrender to Krishna now. It makes things so easy and so wonderful, so blissful. The path of bhakti, we could make such great spiritual advancement just taking prasad in the association of devotees. Just seeing the beautiful form of the deities. And here at Sridhata Gopinath Temple, the pujaris are working so hard to create the most pleasing atmosphere for the deities to live in. And to try to create such a pleasing atmosphere that everyone who comes, their hearts will just be charmed by the beauty of the deity. Srila Prabhupada explains that our temples are none different than Goloka Vrindavan. That is a fact. But it's depending on our creative devotional efforts to actually manifest the reality of Goloka Vrindavan. Yes, the temple is Goloka Vrindavan to the extent the devotees are united on the principle that Krishna's pleasure is our life and soul. And therefore they're humble. To the degree we put aside our personal selfish interests and work together, serve together for the pleasure of Radha Gopinath, then it is Goloka Vrindavan. The potential is there, but it is for us to realize and manifest for others. But when devotees have their individual egoistic motives, when they have their own agendas, then yes, Goloka Vrindavan is there, but you cannot realize it. And you're a terrible, horrible obstruction to allowing other people to realize it. Hare Krishna. So therefore, we want to be transparent. Therefore, the pujari is making so many nice darshans to actually manifest Goloka Vrindavan. Kadamba trees, banyan trees, river Yamuna, swans, monkeys, parrots, peacocks. All for the pleasure of the deities. Because what pleases the deities the most? When they see their devotees falling in love with them. That's what pleases them the most. So we try to create a wonderful environment with whatever Krishna gives us. We want to make everything so nice. What can we do that is up to the standards of Krishna? In Vaikuntha, there's no sandstone or marble. Everything's Chintamani. But we don't have Chintamani here. So we try to get the best we can get. and offer it to Krishna. And if somebody says, oh, why so opulent? It's opulent? This is nothing. This is like a ghetto compared to what isn't Krishna is accustomed to. In Goloka Vrindavan, every grain of dust has more value than all the wealth of the Vaikunthas. And everything in the Vaikunthas is just spiritual substance, not just gold and rubies and diamonds of this world. It's incredible. They don't even... Vaikuntha, there's no need for the light or moon. Everything is self-effulgent. So what can we do for Krishna? But still, we're here in this world, so we try to offer the best so that Krishna's happy. Because it purifies us when what best we possibly can give is offered to the deity. The deity comes just to accept our love. And we do it in such a way, as preachers, knowing that Krishna ultimately comes to this world to attract everyone's heart, we do it in such a way that all the devotees will remain enthusiastic, and all the devotees will remain excited to serve, all the devotees will be anticipating the next darshan with great enthusiasm, longing to come to the temple to see the deities, Radha Gopinath, Gornitai, Gopal. We want to create such an environment that the devotees become very, very, very deeply attracted with deep enthusiasm. And the conditioned souls, they are spellbound when they come. They're spellbound when they see the darshan, when they see the temple, and when they see the incredible loving sentiments of the devotees gathering together to loudly, blissfully chant the holy name. So King Malayadvaj, he becomes so very deeply immersed in the beautiful form of Krishna within his heart that his wife, Vidarbhi, she's massaging his feet. This will come in later verses. And as she's massaging his feet, she feels they're very cold. And then she realizes he left his body. He's just sitting in samadhi like this, and she's serving him so nicely. Servant of the servant. She's just serving him so carefully. She's performing such austerities, although she lived in the kingdom as the queen, sitting on the throne with all opulence with her husband. Now her hair is matted and tangled, her body is thin. She's performing the same austerities along with her husband. And because her husband was such a great Vaishnava, just by serving him, what mercy she gets. She's massaging him, just trying to make him happy. And he's the same. The only difference is he's not there. She didn't even know when he left his body. But she at a certain point, she's... It's cold. There was no life. So then she started to cry, and she was feeling great separation. Jaya Nilo Prema Dana is that type of separation from a Vaishnava. And she was lamenting, what will I do? Can you imagine her dilemma? It's not an easy thing. She's a lady, and she's deep in the inner recesses of the solitude of the jungle. Now when she was with her husband, she felt completely protected serving him. But now she's all alone. Her husband's just, he's gone back to Godhead. And here she is in the middle of the jungle, all alone, with no companion and no one to protect her. So she was crying a lot. But because she served a great Vaishnava like this so nicely, Krishna, the Paramatma, actually appeared to her as a friend and preached to her not to be attached to these worldly experiences. that in your previous life you were Paranjan. And look what a mess you made. And now you're this. But are you Paranjan? No, you were never Paranjan. And are you now Princess Vidarbhi? The wife of this great king? Malayadvaja? So no, you never were. You are the eternal soul. Beyond the body, beyond the ego. You are my part and parcel. Surrender to me. I am your friend. I've been waiting for you. Through all these various transmigrations, I have been in your heart waiting for you. Appealing you, come back home, back to Godhead, to your real identity. And with this, Narada Muni completes his story of King Paranjan. And King Puchini Barhishat got the message very clearly and surrenders his life to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is ever glorified through the chanting of the holy name. Is there any question? Yes, Govinda Prabhu.
Raj, you are mentioning about how Krishna says, okay, you can do yoga or you can do bhakti. But Srila Prabhupada understanding, he just wants to give us bhakti. Sometimes we see that we try to imitate Srila Prabhupada and there are many conditioned souls. We are also conditioned. They are conditioned with certain behavior. But we insist upon, you know, they should practice pure devotional service. And sometimes it reacts in a negative way. They totally give up devotional service because we are very, you know, demanding or too much expecting from them.
That means you are not following Prabhupada's footsteps. That means you are not you, but in principle. Certainly you are following Prabhupada's footsteps. But in your allegorical question, we should understand Prabhupada as he is. In Prabhupada's books, he established the uncompromised supreme absolute truth. Yes? And the way to achieve it. And in his lectures, he did the same thing. But in his personal dealings with people, he was very, very accommodating. He was very compassionate, and he would do whatever was necessary to somehow or other fan the little spark of inclination a person had in his heart. Yes? When we hear from Shamsundar Prabhu, Gurudas Prabhu, when we hear from any of Prabhupada's associates, Mukunda Maharaj, or Niranjan Maharaj, or any people who had some association with Prabhupada, directly or indirectly, we see how merciful he was. Just like he would meet priests, and he would accept their Christianity. He would accept their devotion to Jesus very much. He appreciated it. He just tried to get them to follow Jesus better by giving up eating meat. Yes? And when he was speaking to people who were very much conditioned, sometimes he would say, because these people are so offensive by nature, he would say, don't even preach philosophy to them. Just give them prasad and kirtan. Because through that, they will make advancement without confrontation. Yes? In Amsterdam, when Prabhupada was there at this Vondel Park, the devotees set up a nice place for him to speak. And these crazy people, they were just blaspheming and they were just really offensive, really offensive. Prabhupada didn't leave. He said, there's no use trying to tell philosophy to these people. They're just too degraded. But we should stay here and just give them prasad and chant Hare Krishna. Yes? So in this way, Prabhupada was very kind. He was engaging devotees in intimate service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if they were smoking cigarettes. And he wasn't just telling them they were going to hell. He just, okay, you smoke cigarettes, it's not good for you, but it's all right, you just do this. But in his lecture, no smoking, no meat eating, no intoxications, and in his books. But on a personal level, the application of the books was very compassionate and very oftentimes very gentle and loving, and sometimes very strong, depending on what worked at the time and circumstance. So yes, you know, Prabhupada was very uncompromising in what he spoke in his lectures and what he wrote in his books, but how he applied those principles to individual personal cases was with such compassion. Whatever helped that person to become more attracted to Krishna, he would present it that way. That's following in Prabhupada's footsteps. Not just repeating what's in his books without realization. Yes, we should just repeat within his books, but if we're mature, we repeat it in the same spirit that he did, with realization of how to present it in such a way that people can actually benefit. In his books, he says anyone who's not a devotee is a demon. That's what the Shastras say. But Prabhupada didn't tell the mayor of Chicago, you're a demon. He said, you're a very honorable person. You're doing very good work. Now, you know, just try to understand how you can help your citizens by getting them some prasad and chanting Hare Krishna. Yes? So that is actually following Prabhupada's footsteps. Does that answer your question? Arivo. We should end here because it's very late. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.